Ladies and gentlemen, this is Catherine Austin Fitz and Harry Blaser. Welcome, Harry.
Hello, madam.
We're here to talk about the deep state and the reengineering of America. As you know from listening to the Salieri Report over the last year, I'm very concerned about the plan underway to proceed with radical reengineering of U.S. governance, management, the U.S. government, the U.S. budget. And one of the terms that keeps coming up in that discussion is the deep state. And what I've discovered in the process is there's tremendous misunderstanding about who and what the deep state is. So I invited Harry Blaser to join me in what is likely going to be a series of conversations about what we know about the deep state and who and what they are and why we care about them. Because I think the better you can understand the deep state and how that operation works, the easier it will be for you to navigate your way through the kinds of reengineerings that are happening now and will happen, particularly after the presidential election. So anything you want to say, Harry, about why you're doing this other than the fact I made you do it?
Well, you know, it's been one of the ways that we met was because when I sold my business, I wanted to understand about the real deal. And a big part of that and a very important starting place was, for me, the Kennedy assassination, because that was obviously, to me, the official story didn't make sense. I wanted to understand what really went on and how close could I get to understanding that. And I came across, to me, the most important books that actually also frames what the deep state's about.
Right. And I agree with you. The we're talking about Fletcher Prouty. And I guess his technical title is Retired Colonel Fletcher Prouty.
Right. And the two books are The Secret Team and JFK, the CIA, Vietnam, and the Plot to Assassinate John F. Kennedy.
Right. And he also has a lot of interviews available.
Huge.
Yeah. And so what I will say is that Fletcher Prouty not only provided us with incredible understanding of the Kennedy assassination and other sort of major events, but as he did it, he did a great deal to understand the nuts and bolts of how an operational capacity that threads through many different organizations, but particularly the U.S. government, which we refer to as the deep state, how they function, what it is, how they function, who it is. And so he's got a lot of knowledge that helps you understand the deep state.
Which is why I brought it up. Because today, if you said, how is the deep state operating today when it comes to Syria or some event today?
Right.
You'd be a little harder pressed, although you could do it by extrapolation, to say exactly how. But because there's been so much research and also this guy, Prouty, because of who he was and the position that he was in, what visibility he had, what he actually participated in, you know, he has told you, well, this is what actually happened. And from there, and he tells you, this is how the U-2 failed.
Right.
This is why Kennedy was killed.
So we're going to go through Prouty, and then we're going to come back to some of the other sources and examples that will really help you understand the deep state. Then we're going to back up and talk about, okay, you know, the bigger picture. Where does the deep state fit in, you know, in the whole? We're going to get much higher in the governance structure. But let's start with Prouty. You take it from here. Where do you want to start?
Okay, so as an addendum to this, I'm going to do like a bit of an audio book where I'm going to read some quotes from his book, okay, word for word, so you'll get a real understanding that this guy doesn't pull any punches in the understanding that he has. And at that point, I will go into detail about his credentials.
Right.
Okay? But just suffice it to say that he was one of the guys that didn't sign a non-disclosure agreement, and he was he was basically, for many years, the guy who was responsible for supporting all of the clandestine activities that the CIA did in the world for a period of time.
Okay? Right.
From mid to late 50s
to
60s.
Well, but was he at CIA or DOD?
He was a military person.
Right.
With the rank of colonel in the Air Force.
Right.
That did operations for the CIA and was responsible for supporting all the clandestine operations.
You know, a lot of times you'll see these folks. I'll never forget the first time I saw one who was in the military on the payroll, was also in the CIA, and was also a madman in the mafia. You know, so basically he was working for three organizations at the same time.
So part of, so one of the questions I asked was, what is the relationship of the secret team and the deep state? And what we're going to find out, I think, is that they're quite synonymous in terms of the way that he uses the term. But he would constantly say that there was this guy who might have been a general or a colonel that was had the uniform of the military, who was actually on the payroll of the CIA.
Right.
The military didn't care because they were paying for him,
right,
and they provided the cover.
Right.
But the FBI provides this kind of cover.
Right.
You know, other organizations provide this type of cover,
right,
for clandestine operatives,
right,
that are not just operating outside of this country, but within the country.
Right.
And they... So one of the very important things we need to make clear, and we might as well do this right off the bat, is that the secret state is not the government bureaucracy. And it's not the...
Well, although there will be people on the payroll who are part
point.
Of it. So
they know how to work the bureaucracy. They are oftentimes in very big positions within the bureaucracy. One of the reasons is,
right,
and one of the ways that he describes it, and he gives very specific examples, is that a guy comes in as an assistant to somebody.
Right.
He's there to kind of keep the CIA informed about what's going on and maybe to get some inputs to see if he can get some few things, buttons pushed. So then time goes by, and the guy who was leading the department, who's a political appointee, goes away. Somebody else comes in, he gets advanced to somebody else because somebody else leaves and so on. And before you know it, he's like the second in command of this organization.
Mm-hmm.
And they never knew that he was a CIA guy. The guys that are running it, they don't know that he's CIA. He's always been with the organization.
Throughout the governmental positions in bureaucracy, you have a whole stream, and Prouty describes this, you know, at one point, I remember when I was reading it, where you have a stream of deputies, sometimes it's assistant, but it's deputies, and then counsels, because a lot of it is run behind through the budget with the deputies and through attorney-client privilege through the counsels. And they are very much a part of the deep state, but they're peppered through just like they're peppered through in the media.
And they're peppered through in the media to basically control the disinformation campaign, which
right.
he goes into in detail.
Right.
I mean, across the room from his office was the control and deception, you know,
right.
deception department. They control, they have major inroads into academia. So
right.
they get these, you know, the guys with the big credentials to say, yeah, this is the way it is and write the reports. They're in the think tanks.
Right.
You know, they basically, you know, anybody that has the sense that there isn't great competence involved, that there isn't great planning, there isn't long-term planning,
right.
Prouty will dispel that myth. Okay? So that's a very important part of one of the things that makes it difficult for people to understand how all this is possible. Okay? But when he tells you that he's there when the decision is made at the end of World War II, right at the end of World War II, to send the equipment that was stockpiled for the invasion of Japan to support a 500,000-man invasion of Japan, is then split up, all that equipment. Half of it is sent to Korea. This is at the end of World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And half of it is sent to Vietnam, or what was thought of as Vietnam at that time. You know, that's in 1945.
Right.
The Marines are deployed officially in 1965 in Vietnam.
Right.
The Korean War doesn't happen until 5 or 6 years from now. There's huge planning. And a big part of the planning is, how do we keep conflicts going
right.
for the benefit of money being generated for the large military-industrial complex, which is not a myth. I mean, Eisenhower talked about it, okay? And one of the reasons Eisenhower's talked about it, so I'll just jump into it, is he got burned. Just like
he got burned badly.
Just like he got burned Kennedy got burned by the Bay of Pigs. Well,
right.
Let me tell you how one of the ways that Eisenhower got burned, in a major way, that Prouty has very intimate knowledge of and goes into quite a bit of detail in the books, but also in further interviews, okay? And it's around the Gary Powers U2 fight, okay?
Great
so,
story.
Right. So here's this thing that was shot out of the sky, even today, they'll tell you, it was shot out of the sky, and they show you the wreckage, right? Okay. So what actually happened? Well,
and they captured the pilot.
Captured him, right? It's shot down, right?
Right.
You know, from this high altitude of 70,000 feet or whatever it is, and he's captured, right? All in one piece, and he has, and we know that he is a military agent because of the identification he has on him and all this other stuff. Okay, so how did the U-2 thing actually work? Well, there were three planes that sat on the tarmac. There were three pilots that were, and they ran U-2s, and lots of nations ran U-2s, and sometimes they would often use pilots from other nations to run U-2s for the United States so that they could have deniability, which is a key prerequisite for any covert operation.
Right.
You can't trace it back to the U.S., okay,
right,
or to whatever country's doing it. Okay, so they had three planes sitting there. They got three pilots. Now, before the pilots even get dressed, they strip. There's a doctor that looks at their naked body to make sure they don't have anything on them at all that could be any source of identification. They put on uniforms with cloth that's made not in the United States, but from some other country, so that even the suit can't be attributed to the United States, okay?
Right.
Never mind the planes now, what they go through when they take out any marks or identification or anything that could be traced back to even a manufacturer in the United States, this type of stuff. Okay, so U-2 was a plane that was capable of flying well above 70,000 feet. Okay, he doesn't specifically say, but it's quite clear that it could go up to at least 90,000 feet. It had this remarkable camera that they developed, and that was the real beauty of this thing. It took amazing photographs with amazing detail. Okay, and so that was a very important part of technology that they had and they wanted to protect. So here's the pilots. They're stripped. They look at, there's no identification. They then put the pilots in the planes, and then they move them. So the pilots have no idea what plane they're going to fly, so they can't decide, and they have no idea which pilot's going to fly that day. Okay? That's the extremes that they went to make sure that there was no way that there could be anything that could be smuggled on the plane, placed on the plane, that could identify these guys with the United States. Okay. So when Gary Powers is found, you know, and it wasn't shot down. Okay, that's the other thing you need to know. Prouty takes a picture of the wreckage that Khrushchev puts out, and he shows it to Johnson from, you know, Lockheed, who eventually ran the Lockheed Skunk Works, and he says, is this the U-2 wreckage? He said, no, that has nothing to do with the U-2 wreckage. Second of all, the thing would have been disintegrated. These things are incredibly light. It's more like a glider. It doesn't even have wheels. It has one little wheel on the nose. It kind of crash lands every time it lands.
Right.
So, no. That's just the wreckage that they got of a picture of a pile of junk that they had different places and they put together. Because
right,
Khrushchev,
but they had Gary Powers.
Oh, yeah. But because Khrushchev wanted the world to think that they had the capability of knocking down a plane at 70,000 feet above, which they didn't. Okay, so what actually happened? So that's just an effort of Khrushchev making a heyday out of it. And also, how did all this identification, you know, his driver's license, his PX card, you know, rings that he had that he was going to bribe women with to get out of the country in case he got captured, this type of stuff. How did all that stuff get in the plane? Okay, so when you see stuff like that, what Prouty's telling you is that's the secret team at work. That's the deep state
right.
at work.
So Gary Powers was set up. The plane was set up so that it would run out of hydrogen, so it would have to land, you know, and he would have to parachute out.
Okay. Actually, he didn't parachute out. But that's basically it. So you're getting a little bit ahead of the storyline, but let me,
right.
So, because it's very instructive when you have somebody that's able to give you this type of detail, because this tells you how an op works. Okay? But not only that there's a whole mechanism to support the op, totally outside of even the traditional CIA mechanism and outside of the military mechanism that's there to support it. Okay? It's a whole other deep inside mechanism.
So let me just stop you for a second.
With the ability to totally change world events, because the significance of the U-2 flight was this.
Right.
It derailed détente between Russia and the United States.
Right.
Because Eisenhower was getting to be very good buddies with Khrushchev. They were trusting each other. There was huge amounts of groundwork laid.
And he'd ordered no U-2 flights before he met with Khrushchev.
And he not only ordered, they actually sat down as teams of Russians and Americans. to figure out anything that was going on between the two of them that could derail the peace process and to eliminate that possibility. The U-2 flights was one of them, so Eisenhower instructed that there would be no flyovers. They also stopped covert operations in Tibet because Prouty's team was supporting the Tibetan fighters, right, liberation fighters, with food, with medicine, with ammunition, and they stopped that. So he was so upset by that, he went to the Secretary of Defense and said to him, you know, you can't stop this. My guys are going to get killed on the ground. They're fighting for their survival. No, we can't have anything happening at all that could be misinterpreted or interfere with this peace process that's going to basically end the Cold War.
So Power's flight was an overrule by the secret team of the president's orders.
So basically, because the guys that ran the U-2 that were in an office 2 doors down from Prouty, the next day when this happened, walks in, what's going on? He says, it's bedlam. They didn't even know that they had a flight going on. So right, somebody gave the okay to these pilots that are on the ground to go, you know, go, one of them to take off and go do this. And in the meantime, somebody in there put in all this information tying Powers into the plane, into the parachute, I think it was.
Right. So
tying him to the U.S. military so that Khrushchev could come out on air and say, you know, after, the, because they came out first with it's a NASA plane and they're doing weather research. And then Khrushchev, you know, 5 or 6 days later comes out and says, no, it's, we have all the identification. It's a military operation.
So the reason I wanted to bring this up is we just saw this happen again. So Trump was going to meet with Putin at G20, and suddenly this crazy Ukraine thing happens, and Trump is forced to cancel the meeting with Putin.
Right. So you and I would immediately go, right, that's a secret team operation that's happening separately to derail this thing. And what I'm telling you is that's exactly what happens. It happens all the time.
Right.
It is outside of any governmental, you know, a technical governmental process that's supposed to be in place. Oftentimes, it is outside of even the intelligence agencies,
right, so the
what
line
their plans are.
The line management in the executive branch is often out of the know. When the secret team moves, it may use people in those infrastructures, but the decision-making and some of the operations, all of the operations, are often outside.
And not only that, they may use the bureaucracy, the members in the bureaucracy or the bureaucracy itself, and they're just doing the job that they always do. They don't know how that's related to this other
right,
thing.
Right.
Very few people do. So, how did the U-2 flight end up on the ground? Well, it requires hydrogen, among other things, to allow it to burn the jet fuel that it has at the very high altitude. And without that hydrogen, the engines flame out. The canister that contained the hydrogen that Prouty's team provides, that's part of the military support for these types of missions, the covert missions, was half filled. He's not sure himself who made, you know, just had it half filled. It was the longest flight that a U-2 ever went on, and it basically went down halfway through the flight, exactly where they wanted it to.
Right.
Okay. So here's this thing at 90,000 feet or 100,000, wherever it is, and Gary's flying it, and then all of a sudden the engine stop, and here it comes down, and here it comes down to a level finally where the MiGs would come up and do, you know, here's this thing coming down. Now we can go intercept it. So one guy that was in a train in another interview that I saw said, yes, the sky was filled with MiGs. I was wondering what was going on. Well, here they are, you know, following this thing, and eventually Gary just lands it in a field. Comes down, comes down.
Oh, so he didn't parachute.
That's right.
He
landed. It didn't crash. It landed.
Right.
Because the wreckage would never look like that. If it was shot down, it would have been disintegrated. That's the word that they used.
Right.
And Gary, of course, would have died.
Right.
Right. No, right. No, he actually lands it in a field.
Right.
He steps out and gets captured.
Right.
With all this information.
And gets on TV.
Right. And he's totally dumbfounded by, where did all this information come about me? I didn't put it in. I don't have it. How did it get in a plane? Okay. You know that super-duper camera that I told you about that was in the U-2 plane? Well, this one that went down with Gary Powers standing next to it didn't have that super-duper camera in it. It had an older version from a bomber that wasn't high-tech. So somebody must have understood that that plane was going to come down, and they wanted to protect that technology at the same time disrupt what was going on between Eisenhower and Khrushchev. And it basically fizzled. It never happened, and there was nobody there.
So I'm reminded of one of my favorite videos that we had is in one of our top videos of Chuck Schumer, who I can say nothing nice about except for this video, where he says on, I think he was on Fox News, and he says about the new president, meaning Trump, right after he came, and he says, the president can't defy the CIA. He has to do what he's told. They have 50 ways from Sunday to get you. He'll learn. So what he was saying there is the CIA runs the government, not the president.
Right. And that's a very significant link, which I'm going to have. It's okay. A very significant quote, because Schumer's a good example of a guy who's part of the secret team.
Right.
Okay. He is like a...
He's obedient.
He's like a McGeorge Bundy, not quite as high as McGeorge Bundy was, that totally undermined Kennedy.
I would describe him as a secret team attack poodle.
Yeah, there you go.
Right.
That's a good one.
Right.
And that's why but not only that, you need to look at the way that he says it and the smirk that he has on his face. And it's very clear he's delivering a message to Trump. It says, the CIA is pissed off at you for what you're doing. You can't screw with them.
Better go kiss the ring.
And they have so many ways to mess with you, you can't even believe it. And that's it. He's describing how the secret team functions within the government.
So I just want to take a minute and talk about one of my great frustrations in life. When someone I know tells me, oh, we really want you to go, you know, work in government and help Trump. And one of the things I tell them because it makes me realize they haven't really heard what I'm saying.
Okay, why is it? Because this is important.
So let me get to this. The president is surrounded by a group of Secret Service agents. Are there guns pointed outward to make sure the president's protected? Or is the gun pointed inward to make sure the president does what the secret team tells him?
Well, we know with the JFK assassination that it was pointed inward.
Right.
Right. Now, I'm not saying that the Secret Service shot Kennedy literally, but they created all the conditions where the assassination, where the coup by multiple teams of people could be executed.
Right. They slowed down for the kill
Among other things.
Among other
many,
things.
Okay. Many things.
Right.
But all you need to do, the Zapruder film has been doctored. It's very clear. Okay. But one of the things that it does show you is how they slow down in the kill zone.
Right. But the reason the government bureaucracy is not implementing the wishes of the people, it's not because they're incompetent, not because it's too hard, not because they don't know how to do it. It's because that's not how the system works.
Basically, the government is constantly being either manipulated, intimidated, or undermined.
Or used.
Or used, that's right. To fulfill the desires of the secret government. The covert world is in charge.
Right.
They are in charge.
Right. Because they can kill with impunity and do.
They have unlimited funds.
Right.
They have incredible amounts of talent. They've got compartmentalization that absolutely makes it impossible except for very few people to actually have a clear picture of everything.
They have technology way beyond what we can fathom exists.
Absolutely. They've got all the data in the world to look at.
And here's the best part. Ready for the best part?
Yeah, they got great money.
Every
money too.
Person listening to this Salieri report is pouring money into their pockets. We are all financing them. We are all paying taxes, which finance them. We are all supporting the federal credit, which finance them. And if you look at us, our banks, our insurance companies, our pension funds, our retirement savings, we are buying all their securities when, in fact, their operations are run illegally.
Right. So basically, we have subsidized the Fourth Reich, because you can show very definitively how the CIA, it was structured, it was organized very much, first of all, with the direct advice from guys like Galen, who ran the Secret Service of Germany, and other people that were brought over in Paperclip. These guys helped design the structure and the organizational structure and the operational rules and guidelines of the intelligence agencies.
So let me step back for a second. If you go back, one of the books I always recommend to people is Trading with the Enemy by Charles Higham. Because what it shows was that there was coordination above the presidential level during World War II, and you literally saw president orders overruled so a ball bearing factor in Ohio could keep providing the Third Reich with what it needed to keep the tanks going. I call it the metastructure, coordinating keeping the war going and using resources on both. So part of the reason Dulles is so important is he's sitting in Switzerland during the whole time laundering money back and forth so that IBM can run the Holocaust databases. You know, there's Edwin Black's wonderful book on IBM and the Holocaust explains between Higgins' book and the IBM book, you get a clear picture that there is a metastructure above both governments, and it's doing a variety of things and laundering information and money and resources back and forth, in part to keep the war going. So at the end of the World War, you had 75,000 Nazis basically brought into America. That's a huge number of people. I mean, Operation Paperclip was a big operation. And they're brought in, and literally, we talk about the deep state peppering through all these different organizations and bureaucracies. Those Nazis get peppered all across the place, and then their money gets brought into and laundered, including through the Vatican, into a whole series of places, both in Latin America and Europe and the United States. And basically, the whole Nazi infrastructure is just merged in. If you will.
Not only was it merged, it provided, basically, they were advisors about how to structure our intelligence agencies, keep them secret, keep them compartmentalized, so that they could function and a lot in the same way as effectively as the Germans' secret state did. Okay. Right. Now, you've mentioned a number of very significant things in what you just said. But, you know, it's not a coincidence because Prouty doesn't pull any punches. It's not a coincidence that guys like Chester Pulley, the most decorated Marine general ever, you know, ends up writing a book that says war is a racket.
I thought that was Butler. Smedley Butler said war.
Smedley Butler.
You're right.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Chester Pulley was another Marine who ended up feeling the same way, I think. That's right. So, yeah, these guys understand that one of the main missions of the deep state secret teams is to foment conflict to keep the war machine going. One of the problems with World War II was that not even so much the atom bomb, but the hydrogen bomb ended war as we knew it up to that time.
But they believed they needed war for economic reasons.
It changed the kinds of wars that could be fought in the future.
Right.
So it was going to become basically a counterinsurgency world.
Right.
And so the Cold War was planned, Prouty tells you, he shows you even the operations that were being done in 1944 to basically foment the Cold War. And now we've just replaced the word communist, which was the catchphrase to allow you to do anything you wanted to in the fun and games world and to finance it anyway and to be secret about it anyway with the word terrorist. That's all.
Right.
To keep it going. So when you take a look, so this idea about, God, how stupid these guys are to have done Vietnam. They did. No, you don't understand. The goal of Vietnam was to have a war extend for 10, 15, 20 years that brought in hundreds of billions of dollars into the war machine. Right. That was it. So it was a very successful operation. And it was run by the CIA right up until 1965 when the Marines were deployed, and the Marines were not going to be deployed as long as the CIA was in charge. That's what the heads of the Marines say, when I don't trust these guys.
Okay, so let me step back. One of the reasons I sometimes have trouble communicating is I find myself talking to people who've lived in the overt world, and they look at the governance, the management and governance structure as whatever they've been taught in civics classes or whatever they read in the Wall Street Journal. And whereas I look at pots of money and risk and everything sort of being organized around the transactional and management flow as to, you know, what's happening and where things are going. And it's a totally different way of looking at the world, because you have to look at the world as a sort of financial and economic ecosystem. Because part of where they go is where it's logical to go, given where the money is now. So you have to, it's not enough to understand the people and what their goals are. You have to look at what the economics are. So I just want to mention a few things, because if you look at the machinery that they have created to finance secret worlds, it's quite phenomenal. It's the most amazing financial accomplishment in the history of the world.
And Prouty goes into some detail in terms on the operational. And he'll tell you that even the head of Joint Chiefs of Staff, the chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff, was constantly surprised when he found out, wait, the money's going for that? Oh, these weapons that we lent you guys went for that?
Right.
You mean you have how many warehouses throughout the world?
It's unbelievable.
With all this equipment in it?
Right.
And that's where it goes back to Inouye, who was running the investigation about Iran-Contra.
Right.
And part of the link is going to be his quote at the end, his last speech, where he talks about basically the intelligence agency, in particular the CIA, having their own army, navy, so on, the ability to support it, can launch the wars anywhere in the world, can do what they want. Right. This is from the guy that was investigating it.
We're talking about essentially infinite amounts of money for private armies. So in this, when World War II is over, they pass the 47 and the 49 Act. The 47 Act creates the National Security State. The 49 Act creates the CIA. So the big trouble in this phase starts there. And what that does is that gives them the ability to claw money out of any federal agency. So Congress appropriates to HUD $100 million. They claw $50 million back for the CIA.
Yeah, and I think there was some later legislation, not too much after that time, that actually provided the defined how those mechanisms could work.
Right.
So in other words, they legitimized the secret funding of these organizations
by
law.
Here's the power. So we know that there is constitutional requirements and legal requirements and lots of financial management law that we've written about and published that describes the fact that they have to report their accounts. However, in 1981, when Bush took control of the national security state, that was basically his deal with Reagan. When he took control, he passed an executive order. They promulgated an executive order signed by the president that private corporations could do highly classified acts. And to me, that's the magic moment. When you add 47, 49 with this, what you're saying is, and you do with the fact that the government does not provide transparent accounts, including to Congress. So once you establish that the government can run financially outside the law and using the reserve currency status, borrow an infinite amount of money and turn it over to private corporations to build assets that the private corporations own, I mean, you're basically talking, think of how hard CEOs work to get their earnings up 10 cents so they have a good quarter report. So you're taking this rapacious model that's, in the stock market, and you're giving it access to an infinite amount of money on a non-transparent basis to do whatever this group wants. How's that going to work?
So two things very important to add to what you're saying. 70% of the intelligence budget goes to private corporations, goes to private contractors. That's first of all.
And that's only what they admit today.
That's today.
That's the
never mind the black part of the black budget.
Right.
Okay. And the second thing is that corporations give another layer of insulation because of the corporate veil.
The secrecy is engineered through the corporations.
Right.
Right.
So, and the third is that huge amounts of wealth have been created by folks that specialize in sucking up the subsidies that government provide. And these subsidies that we're talking about is like 70% of this money that's going to corporations from the intelligence budget.
Here's the magic sauce that happens after World War II. You take the extraordinary flow of money that you can create running the government on a secret, out-of-control basis using the federal credit, treasury securities, dollars all over the world. You combine that with the leverage of controlling the exchange stabilization fund and the securities markets. So now we're talking about stealing a dollar, but with financial leverage, the federal credit, now stock market derivatives, being able to turn every dollar into $200 to $2,000.
And not only that.
And now you've got a machinery that can buy the world.
Prouty will tell you about businesses that were subsidized, that were competing directly with unsubsidized, you know, just regular businesses. Guys just trying to run businesses. And here's a CIA-funded business front that's involved with laundering money, that's operating a legitimate business that's competing with you with a cost of capital that's way below it.
Their cost of capital is so much lower. That's why we keep seeing the mediocre win. And the mediocre winning because they're not winning based on the business or the product or the service. They're winning because their cost of capital is so much lower that you can't possibly, they can buy everybody. They can spread the money around. And we've played this game globally. And while everybody's saying, their weapons are terrible, you know, they're really inefficient, they're overstaffed, they don't see it because they don't see how the cost of capital is driving the win.
And also, they're in the business of raising money by selling drugs.
Right.
Okay, and so they have lots of these other illegal activities that they're involved in that have been given legal status even by sometimes by the courts for their right to do it. And
now,
hide it.
Let's get back to Prouty. Because I couldn't figure out narcotics trafficking until I read The Secret Team. And because The Secret Team documents how they use attorney-client privilege. If you read the RJR Nabisco documents and on that lawsuit by the European Union, who's competing for the market share, and you read Prouty, what you realize is, oh, they have an entire parallel infrastructure in the law firms and in the government bureaucracy that can operate and launder all of this between attorney-client privilege. I was convinced that HUD was laundering a huge, and the mortgage markets were laundering a huge amount of the narcotics trafficking that the CIA and Department of Justice were clearly doing. They were doing it through government accounts, and they could do it because you have this whole parallel universe of deep state people peppered through, and if they're not deep state people, they're just people with a control file created by the deep state.
Every now and then, because of certain pivotal events, we get a glimpse into the mechanisms. Okay, so what are they? Well, you got the 4749 legislation that you can go read and see how they establish these organizations and also how they decide to fund them and later. And so you know that basically the ability for criminality that is built in to the legislation, okay? Then you get things like the Bay of Pigs. There's enough written about that. So you can see, okay, what went wrong there, which we can go into detail. That's another thing that was sabotaged. It's not at all what the press says happened. Then you get the Kennedy assassination.
Right.
And you get you understand that now as an op because it's just been so much good research done by people. And it's they've had 50, 60, 70 years to do whatever it is. Then you get Iran, Vietnam War, and there's enough information now about the Vietnam War that you can start to put together, oh, that's how the secret team works. You've got Iran-Contra. You've got the Church Committee before that, okay?
Right.
These are glimpses that you get. And then, to a certain extent, then, of course, the other major pivotal event is 9/11, which we, you know, don't have real super visibility of, but we have plenty of research that's been done to know it's basically an op. It's not the op as represented by the conspiracy that's represented by the government. It's something very different.
So I want to step back for a second and talk about who, because, you know, one of the reasons I'm very comfortable talking about the deep state and the secret team is they trained me. You know, I grew up with them. I was around them. Okay. And a lot of my research has just been, my attorneys asked me to record 6 90-minute cassettes of working at HUD. So I took my personal experience of working with, you know, sort of and bumping into the deep state at HUD. And then I went out and I researched and I said, oh, that's what that was. Oh, that's what it was. Oh, that's what it was. So I'm trying to take what I know anecdotally or from personal experience and then matching it up with serious research. And that's sort of where my understanding comes from. But for me, it's a reality because I understand the world is run from the covert side. So let me get into who, because one of the things that first happened to me when I started to dive into this kind of research in approximately I signed up for the CIA drug list. It was a listserv where they were discussing narcotics trafficking by the intelligence agencies. And the first thing I discovered is there were three groups. One said, it's the Vatican. It's all the Vatican. It's a giant global conspiracy run by the Vatican. The next group said, it's all the Masons. It's a giant global conspiracy run by the Masons. The Masons are to blame. And then the third group said, it's the Jews. It's the Zionists, you know, and then they'll back up and say it's the Zionists. But, and one of the interesting things, when I was a kid in Philadelphia, you had all three of those groups competing and cooperating. And the power of the relative groups have changed. You and I talk about why we think the Vatican is really, their power is as low as it's been since World War II. And the Masons and the, you know, Jews have teamed up and are ascendant. But one of the things I want to talk about is there, you know, all three of those groups clearly have massive resources and power. You know, but it's not just one. There is no magic bullet of it's, oh, it's, you know, and of course we have to now add it's the aliens or it's the interdimensional forces. But
well, Prouty in the final preface to this Secret Team book talks about how, I'll just read it. Let me just read this one excerpt. They can use the finest intelligence system in the world, and the most importantly, they have been able to operate under the canopy of an assumed ever-present enemy called communism. It will be interesting to see what enemy develops in the years ahead. It appears that UFOs and aliens are being primed to fulfill that role for the future. Of course, right. There was a step of terrorism in between, right. Which, by the way, the secretary of Wernher von Braun said, yeah, first it's the communists, then it's the terrorists, now it's going to be the aliens.
Right.
Okay? So when you make comments like this, they might say, you know, here she is off on a go. I'm telling you, you know, when you make comments like that, people need to listen. That's what I can tell you.
Well, you know, to me, and we'll get there, but the question behind all of this is, okay, who really does? The secret, to me, the deep state, a.k.a. the secret team, is the operational capacity. And then there's still a secret governance system. We know Wall Street and the money is clearly very important. So the owners of the New York Fed and the Fed member banks and that ownership structure is very, very powerful, and I would argue still more powerful than the military intelligence, but clearly the intelligence operates on their behalf, and that's my experience. I don't see anything that's changed.
Yeah, so I guess the way that we would say it is, and Prouty is very, very clear that he also believes this is the case, that there's a board of directors.
Right, there is.
The secret team, the CIA works for the secret team, the secret team works for the board of directors.
Right, exactly.
That's basically how he puts it. Right. But it's not just him. You know, Buckminster Fuller says it, Disraeli says it, Winston Churchill says it, and I'm going to have links to, you know, the 25 and 30 people over the last 150 years that claim, yeah, there's a board of directors. And people call it the high cabal, they call it different things. Right,
it's interesting. You see Dolan and Daniel List both do stories recently on Forrestal and Forrestal's death. And Forrestal's death is a very interesting, you know, you basically have the secret team take out the Secretary of Defense and then kill him.
That's right.
And it's quite remarkable to watch how they do it. And you see the, you know, the kind of extraordinary capacity they had in the Gary Powers U2 incident. Okay, so now let's turn.
Right. So they derailed detente, the possibility for the Cold War ending and us to have peace during the Eisenhower administration, which was what he wanted to be his utmost legacy.
Right.
And then he does his little, let me tell you about the military-industrial complex speech on the way out, which I always thought was a bit hypocritical because he was involved with the military for so long, but now I understand.
But you know something? Eisenhower got the space program moved to a civilian agency. If you've ever watched Sputnik Fever, it's one of my favorite documentaries because it shows him standing up and beating the Shriekometer. And it's one of the few examples you will see in history of the U.S. president beating the Shriekometer.
He won over the Shriekometer.
Yes.
That was saying what? What was the Shriekometer saying?
The Shriekometer was saying that we needed to turn this capacity over to the military and dramatically increase expenses because they had satellites first. And, you know, it was a lot of scare tactics.
Okay, by the same token, the secret team has figured out, regardless of what that end result was, of how to use NASA or any private corporations to do their bidding.
Right.
And you could say it's even more hidden now than it might have been.
But the Shriekometer is controlled by the secret team.
Oh, yeah. They
absolutely.
They push things the way that they want, for sure.
Right. It's a, in fact, think of the Shriekometer as a, you know,
it's
as
the press.
As well as a dog, you know, a sheepdog that's hurting the president and the executive branch Congress to do what they want. So, you know, it, I can have a control file on you, but if I don't have a control, I just turn the Shriekometer on.
But it also chooses what you're not going to hear about.
Right.
As significantly.
Right. But my one of my favorite Eisenhower stories, which I believe is true, is he, you know, one of his greatest mistakes was that the CIA was not supposed to be operational. Of course, it's very, one of the most interesting things you can get from Prouty is how it immediately turned into an operational agency, both domestic and foreign, not just intelligence gathering. But he,
and it wasn't even supposed to gather intelligence. It was supposed to coordinate the gathering of the intelligence.
Exactly.
And come up with the analysis.
Exactly.
And then it went to coordination, and then it then it went to collection.
And then went,
which became a primary front, as he maintains, for the fun and games.
Right. But here's the worst part. He put them in charge of security for Area 51. And between that and the hidden system of finance created by the seizures after World War II, he turned the CIA into the most powerful bank in the world. The most powerful bank in the world. And that is truly frightening. Anyway, but so he had authorized them to do security on Area 51. And suddenly they stonewalled him. He wasn't getting briefed. So he calls them and demands they come in for a briefing. And finally they won't. They're basically defying the president. And he calls them up and he tells them that he is going to fly to Colorado, get the First Army, and invade Area 51 unless they're in his office the next day to brief him. Now, what's interesting is Eisenhower truly had leadership capacity. The military would do what he said. He was admired. He was respected. He was followed by the military. After Eisenhower, there was no president who could command that loyalty because we know the military stood down at Dallas, which leads us to the Kennedy assassination, which to me is, after Prouty, reading and understanding the Kennedy assassination is the single most important thing you can do to really see the deep state.
Dulles basically stacked the deck, hoping that Kennedy would get in over Nixon, which was kind of bizarre because they felt they could control him more.
They felt they could control
Kennedy.
Kennedy better than Nixon.
Yeah, because he wasn't sophisticated. He's coming in. He's young. His father was in organized crime.
But he was in pain. He was in pain.
Yeah. Right. So, and then what they found out was he was a little bit smarter than what they expected. And also he was a little bit more principled, a lot more principled than what they expected. And Robert was a real pain in the ass.
Right.
And having both of them there was a major problem. But what Prouty comes out and says, very basically, these guys didn't have a chance against the entrenched powers when they came in. And when he finally decided to pass the national security advisement that said, we're going to get out of Vietnam, all American personnel are going to be out of Vietnam by 65. And he basically was committed to winding down the war. He said that was his death warrant.
Right.
So there's a constant theme that comes up. Anybody that's working for peace and has the and gets close and has the power to make it happen, okay, is going to be prevented from making that happen.
I think there are a couple issues. There's a model. Anybody who tries to change the model is a problem. And the model is, number one, not running a war economy. Number two, not controlling, you know, letting the banks and the secret team control the reserve currency. Because the secret team, the governance structure of the secret team controls the central banks, right?
Yes. In other words, Kennedy basically tried to short circuit many, many third rails.
Right.
The Federal Reserve Bank, and he wanted, you know, he was starting to have the Secretary of the Treasury do what he was supposed to do and issue, you know, real U.S. money. U.S. Steel he went against. He went against the oil guys with the oil, trying to get rid of the oil depletion allowance.
Right.
He went against the military and basically what stopped the Vietnam War. He went against the major intelligence agency, CIA, that was running the show by firing the top three guys and calling them on Bay of Pigs.
Right.
And he also took away the ability for the CIA through another national security advisement document that the military was now going to be in charge of any and all corporate. They're going to be responsible for all covert operations, not the CIA,
right,
which it weasels its way in over time to be that basically was in charge of it. So he did so many things that disrupted so many, never mind the military contracts that he had rewarded to certain companies that weren't, that they didn't want to go there. The military guys didn't want to go there because that would give them the most political leverage in these districts. He touched almost every third rail that there was, you know, trying to short circuit it. But all I'm saying is, from Prouty's perspective, when he said when we're getting out of Vietnam, that was his death warrant. That's the way that he describes it.
So I would probably disagree with Prouty there, because I think it was a couple of things across the model, including, so we talked about currency, we talked about war. I would also say secrecy. Kennedy was looking to make the world a much less secret place. And the secret team's power very much depends on secrecy.
Prouty's whole thesis is that secrecy is a disease that has cost us huge amounts of personal capital, money capital, all kinds of resources, and it is a disease that is absolutely destroying democracy and turning it into a fascist state.
Well, I will tell you, the minute that the general leadership, the establishment in Washington, in my opinion, accepted the Federal Accounting Standard Board policy, this is the equivalent of announcing we're going to be a fascist dictatorship.
Well, the Patriot Act was a major step. So we can take a look at legislation continually that shreds the Constitution, that gives incredible amounts of power to centralized government, that gives tremendous amount of facilitation to more and more secrecy, that makes criminals out of the people that are trying to expose the criminality and protects the criminals. And it's just been this constant
right, move but where
forward.
We are as an economic model is you're saying to the citizens, you have to buy our bonds and you have to pay our taxes, and we can take all of that money and just give it to private banks and corporations and give you a piece of paper back, which you were liable for, and there's nothing you can do. And whatever we're doing down here, it's none of your business.
We are subsidizing our own slavery, enslavement, which you have talked about many times.
It's not just subsidizing. We are giving. And now with California and the fires and the, I mean, we know we're watching weather warfare and thermal warfare going on against law-abiding Americans. So now they're just taking your land. And it's not even a pump and dump on the stock market or a pump and dump of the housing market. We're just coming in and firebombing you and taking your land is where this is going.
So the point of Prouty is, here's a guy that had the ability to know, who came clean about a lot of stuff. He's telling you that there's huge amount of planning, there's incredible amounts of competence, they have everything that they need to basically fulfill their agenda. They work for a group of guys that are outside of the government. They are extra government. They're extra legal. They have the ability to kill. They do it constantly as one of their many weapons that they have. And these guys are basically the main power. They are changing the world and directing the world in ways that basically the constitutional process has no power over. And they are alive and well and getting stronger. This is in the 90s now.
Right.
They're getting stronger and stronger. And unless we basically figure out a way to defund these guys and disconnect and disrupt this mechanism, democracy cannot survive.
Right.
These are the messages that he's delivering.
Right.
And he's giving you very precise details about very specific operations, very significant, life-changing, world-changing situations that were orchestrated by the secret team that changed our life on this planet forever. Okay, very specific in how it was done, why it was done.
So one of the things I often hear is the problem is that the American leadership is incompetent. So I just finished reading Tucker Carlson's new book, and it's really delightful. But basically he's saying the problem is the establishment is incompetent. And the fear porn that makes me so angry basically says, okay, the empire is incompetent, but it's powerful and it's running its out, and then it's going to fail. And after the collapse, things will all go back to normal. We'll have a very difficult period to live through, but they will fail. But it has a vision of these guys as incompetent. Now, there's plenty of incompetent people because the way they run it is sloppy intentionally if you're playing the cost of capital game. But my experience with the A-team from, you know, 30 years ago till today is they're amazingly competent.
Right. So two very important things here. There is very detailed planning, strategic planning.
Right.
By very intelligent people.
Exceptionally intelligent people.
And they are very competent people within the framework doing the operations that are extremely competent. The Kennedy assassination was clever.
Amazing.
The U2, you know, bring down the U2 when the president is telling you you can't do it.
Right.
To be able to bypass that and to be able to figure out the technical ways and all the innards to get that canister delivered to that plane so right. That it's going to drop out halfway through on the longest flight. You know, all that stuff takes, it's clever.
Right. Okay?
To basically manufacture 9/11 and then also manufacture the cover-up is very clever.
But let me just say on 9/11, when globalization began, and I was traveling around the United States, one of the things I noticed was they were significantly rebuilding and reengineering all the airports so that they would significantly increase the retail shop capacity. They were turning all the airports into malls. And this was in, you know, 95, 96, 97, 98. And I kept thinking, how are they going to make this, you know, this enormous investment of capital and planning. How are they going to make this infrastructure pay for itself? And then 9/11 happened. And I thought, oh, okay, this was how they were going to make the infrastructure. But you had to be building out the infrastructure to change the airports 10 years before 9/11 happened.
You also talk about slop. Yeah, there's a lot of slop. Some of it's intentional. But part of what Prouty says is that it's a product of the way that the secret team works, because it is what he talks about. It's almost like this cybernetic machine that responds to inputs automatically. So you have lots of people around the world that have a certain amount of autonomy, a lot of capability, and machinery to do stuff that, you know, as headquarters, hey, we're hearing that the communists are going to do this here or whatever. All the terrorists are doing this here. Do we have permission? Yeah, sure, go ahead. We got all the money in the world. Go ahead and go do your thing. So you've got lots of people oftentimes that are doing things that don't know the other guys are doing something, that are working against what they're doing,
right.
That conflicts what the military's doing. And so you've got that type of a slop. But major operations like Vietnam or Iraq are orchestrated, and they are prosecuted often under false pretenses. So 9/11 happens. Then we immediately identify this entity called Al-Qaeda as the culprit.
Uh-huh.
And in turn, we target Osama bin Laden, who is supposed to be the leader of Al-Qaeda.
Right.
Then we use terrorism as a pretext to invade Afghanistan to get at the Taliban, that is not Al-Qaeda, and as a pretext to invade Iraq to get rid of Saddam Hussein, who was the foremost arch enemy of Al-Qaeda in the world. So we are going to attack the Taliban and eliminate Saddam Hussein as a result of Al-Qaeda being the architects of 9/11. Except it makes total internal sense when you take a look at what's the goal. Well, the goal is to have controlled chaos throughout the Middle East so that you can basically control the resources. You can have an ongoing source of conflict and war. You want controlled chaos, which is one of the major strategies that the CIA does around the world.
Right, although I've never quite understood their strategy in the Middle East relative to the globe, because you sink tremendous resources in something that, you know, while you ignore things that are important elsewhere. It's almost as though you want the United States to diminish in power intentionally.
Well, there may be that too.
Right.
But in terms of, if you're just taking a look at, we want to create the maximum amount of chaos that's controllable, that will generate the maximum amount of money for the various constituencies that are involved with fighting terrorism. You couldn't have done it better.
Right.
You know, you do what you're doing in Syria. You get rid of Gaddafi, who was keeping a huge number of these factions under control. You get rid of Saddam Hussein, who was doing it also. You foment war between Iraq and Iran for years, so you get that whole Shiite thing, against the other faction going.
Right.
I mean, so those are indications not of incompetency. They're indications of a detailed strategic
direction
plan.
Right. You talked about Prouty's books. I think the best book, after Prouty, the best book on the JFK assassination, in my opinion, is David Talbot's book, The Devil's Chessboard.
Right. So the three, Mosaic.
Mary's Mosaic. Peter Janney.
The Unspeakable.
Unspeakable by Douglas.
And this one by Talbot.
Those are the three best.
Right.
Right. And it's amazing because I'll never forget, I have one great ally, extremely intelligent. I got him to read The Devil's Chessboard. And I should just say, The Devil's Chessboard is a biography of Dulles. And you really don't get the 411 on the assassination until you read the last two chapters, and it ties it all together. It's remarkable. And you see a lot about how the secret team works. You know, like their little... It was either in Janney or Devil's Chessboard where the mafia daughter is explaining how, you know, the best way to hit somebody is get them in for elected surgery, and, you know, they just happen to die. Anyway, so there's all these great little factoids about how the system works. But what Talbot does is he really helps you understand how the project management and the coordination with the upstairs and all the money guys is done. Now, it's very carefully done and it's very subtle, but he absolutely nails the story. And it's quite remarkable. It's quite a remarkable book. So anyway, I give it to this friend. And he calls me and he says, I just feel very, you know, like dropped from a seesaw about this. And I said, you already know, you know, that the establishment killed Kennedy. And he said, you know, it's one thing to know it. It's another to see the details of really how it happened. And it's a paradigm shifting experience when if you read those three books. And we know in the Peter Janney book, Peter Janney's dad, he came to believe was involved for the CIA in implementing the assassination. And he goes through the description as he's writing this book of it dawning on him that his own father was involved as part of the kill team. And you realize, ooh, you know. And it's almost as though we, as a nation, we have to go through, or people, we have to go through the realization. You know, to me, it's a Rosemary's Baby moment. This is really happening. And I'm involved. It's not something in Washington and Wall Street. If you look at how it threads through my life, my money, my balance sheet, my financial statement, my work, my company, I'm involved.
So the important messages are the covert world is the most powerful force.
Right.
That the deep state secret team is alive and well. And is shaping our lives much more than probably any other process. That this whole idea of incompetency is a cover,
right? And complexity,
and yeah, that provides the obfuscation. So the real question is it too late? Because this thing is so entrenched. It is so pervasive, it is so well-financed, and now it's so turbocharged by technology. How do you disconnect it?
Okay, so I want to get to that question, but I want to dive in and hit a couple of points before we get there just to flush them out. I think one of the most amazing things that happened, and a lot of this was post-Prouty, that really turbocharged the secret team was the creation of NSA and the use of digital surveillance and AI to do digital surveillance. Because you're creating the capacity at a very economic basis to basically put 24/7 Stasi teams, you know, because you can use software bots, you don't need humans. So you're talking about complete surveillance and now even entrainment and mind control of 325 million people. You know, it's funny. I've done a couple of interviews with people who call themselves the targeted individuals because they're targeted for electronic harassment. And, you know, what I've said to them is, look, get over your victim thing, because there are 325 million targeted individuals in America. And, you know, I would add more in other countries. And they divide between two groups of people, those who know they're targeted and those who don't. It's extraordinary.
Except the electronic harassment is a whole other level of targeting. But yeah, we are all surveilled. We're all targeted to be harvested.
And we're all influenced.
To be harvested and influenced. That's right.
Right, right. And it's kind of an extraordinary infrastructure once you understand it. So the rise and expansion of the NSA.
The role of data.
The role of data turned over to private corporations.
Sure.
Because just as the Treasury has become a way to launder all the money as a gift into private corporations who now own the technology, what we're watching is the NSA as a laundry mechanism to launder all the data on the planet into private corporations. It's quite extraordinary, right? Okay, so I want to get back to this question of, because there is a Zionist issue, there is a Vatican issue, there is a Freemason group. These groups exist and they are an issue. So one of the things we've said is we think the power of the Vatican is at an all-time low. Maybe you want to say a few words on that.
No, you keep going.
Okay. Well, I believe that the Vatican absolutely got trumped when the Freemasons, basically with the help of the Zionists, built the digital surveillance structure. So the Vatican, why they got left flat-footed, I'm not sure. But from what I can see, you know, if you look particularly at the creation and management of the control file system, including with pedophilia, the Vatican's taken 100% of the blame, and that was a joint venture. You know, how did they wake up and take 100% of the blame? I mean, it's the biggest, you know, and they just keep taking it. What's that about? I mean, I don't get it. But you see a real power shift in the competition. It was very serious and mean. The other thing is, there is a serious problem. We just saw Australia debate and reject no double passports, no double citizenry for anybody in a senior political government position, including their legislators. We now have a significant number of people in Congress and in the line bureaucracy who are dual citizens, including of Israel. And it is a very serious problem. I mean, we even had an FBI, the head of the FBI before Mueller, stand up and say the biggest threat to national security in America was Israel. Harry's being very quiet.
Israel, take a look at the size of that country, and they have incredible amount of influence. There's two ways that comes. One is money. Well, you know, the main boulevard in Tel Aviv is named after Rothschild.
Right.
And the second thing is by having something on everyone. So really, really good intelligence.
Right.
But there's a third part of that, that I believe that the Israelis have been very active in helping to support our secret team. They're part of the secret team.
For example, William Stevenson at the end of World War II points out that the deal that Americans made with the Brits is they would both listen on the telephone systems, and then the Brits would get the data and then give it to us, and that's how we got around the laws. It's very interesting the way it's done. You know, and we were very tied into the Brits at the intelligence level. In fact, we see the president agree not to make the FISA court and some of these documents available because the Brits are apoplectic, because they were so deeply involved. But then the other is, from what I've seen during Iran-Contra, the Mossad was doing a lot of the dirty tricks for the secret team. They could basically say, oh, it's those guys. And they were willing to operationalize and handle so much of that they very much earned a promotion in the system.
Prouty goes into a lot of effort to talk about how much money is spent supporting our friends and allies overseas, but also compensating people that get pissed off because we've compensated them and we didn't get any. So you got to equal the playing field.
Right.
So it's huge amounts of money. You know, when something gets dropped off in Colombia because they had to ditch it.
Right.
With Guatemala coming back and those other Latin American countries saying, hey, wait a minute, they got this. Well, you need to give it to us too.
Right.
So there's lots
of
effort.
The Midianite thing is one of their biggest dangers, one of their biggest risks. So that kind of fighting. Okay, so let's now go and talk about America today. We in this commentary, we recommended JFK by Oliver Stone as the movie because it has so much insight into the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah, and also Donald Sutherland is basically a
Prouty.
Yeah, he's a composite of Prouty.
Right. So it's very, up until that point, it's unbelievably instructive about how the world really works. If I had to pick one to help you understand currently, it would have been Eyes Wide Shut. Because you literally see this level above, way above the government that is just has powers approaching magic. It's that powerful. And you know, during the litigation, I dealt with invisible man technology. So I'm absolutely convinced that they have it just from what I saw. So bring us up to the current level.
Well, I think that we should go back because I think like going into depth about the U2 incident is very significant.
Yes.
Okay. I think we need to do it with the Kennedy assassination.
So let's do that right now.
No, we don't have time.
Okay.
I think we need to come back and do it with Iran-Contra because these are very, very pivotal events.
Iran-Contra
we need to come
is
back and
helpful.
Do it with 9/11 because 9/11 is basically the context for all of the stuff that happens after that in terms of the shredding of the Constitution, the gigantic move towards fascism, the collection of data, the ability to collect the data, a whole other level of secrecy because, you know, it's not just what you talked about, the Congress saying, yeah, it's okay now for the government not to, under the guise of secrecy, not to be accountable financially. But they've passed lots of other things that says, you know, if we say that it's secret, you can't talk to your lawyer about this.
Well, they just implemented a policy which is unconstitutional, illegal, and are acting like somehow through the Federal Accounting Standards Board has the ability to tear up the Constitution and tear up the financial management laws and ignore Congress.
I know. All I'm saying is that that's happening on multiple levels.
Yes.
And 9/11 enabled that.
Yes.
Okay. So that's why it's very important to look at that.
Right.
And all I'm saying is, you and I look at these incidents when they happen, and we go, oh, well, this is the deep state. And people are still struggling with that in 2018, even people that are very intelligent people we know that should know better.
Right. So I want to talk about the memory wipe, because in my experience, the way you really come to understand and see the deep state is you see them do something. And then time goes by and you see them do another thing and time goes by and you see them do another thing and you start to accumulate knowledge. And one of the phenomena I've seen is literally people seeing them, you know, saying, oh, you know, it looks like there's a deep state. And then it's like they forget. It's a memory wipe. It's one of the reasons I don't watch or have a TV because, you know, I don't want the memory wipe. But there is an inability to kind of recapture and maintain history independent of the official story and the official reality. And so if you look at how fast the secret team right now is moving very, very fast. They're moving very, very fast on bringing capacity back into the United States and reshoring the national security state. They're moving very, very fast on high IQ immigration. They're moving very, very fast on robotics and AI. They're moving very, very fast on space. They're moving fast on all these things. In other words, it's almost as though they've said, financial coup is over. We're ready to take the money and go to the next step. And we're free to rock and roll because we've got all these things sorted out. And so they're going up the S curve in a whole variety of different ways. And their attitude is, we don't need you guys anymore. We're just doing, so get out of the way. And I think this is why the California fires keep having a really profound impact, because one of the questions for them that they proved on 9/11 is the mind control is really working. I mean, 9/11, we had this effort to get all the towers up, and I had a friend who was a project manager for one of the tower companies. And for 2 years before 9/11...
Cell towers.
Cell towers. He was just telling me, you know, the pressure that we are getting, the urgency, the speed is just unbelievable. It's so brutal. Now, in the meantime, because I'm driving all over the United States, one of the things I can tell you is the cell towers don't work for your cell phone.
Okay, but what I'm advising is this, because sometimes the subscribers, it's hard for them to make the leaps that you do.
I understand.
And I've been, you know, trained in this for 20 years with your help. Okay, so all I'm saying is I think it's important to go at these pivotal events where now we have a lot of information about it that shows the inner working of this, so that people will be convinced this thing is real. The deep state
is real. But I'm not talking about
insidious.
The fact that it's real. I'm talking about the fact that there is something right now that people need to pay attention to.
Okay.
Okay, so let me get...
Yeah.
So I think what happened on 9/11... So August 2001, the project manager calls me. He says, you're not going to believe this. They've laid it all out, and they said it's done. And I said, uh-oh, something big's going to happen. So part of 9/11
was... This is August of 2001.
Right. 9/11 required much greater control, not just... you know, entrainment technology and subliminal programming, but using the NSA surveillance to intervene and manage 325 million Americans one at a time. And I think they satisfied themselves that it was very successful. And the more confident they get that it's successful, you know, whether it's their reengineering of the financial system or their reengineering of the media or the mind control, the faster they can go. To me, what we just saw happen in Paradise is the result of what they did in Santa Rosa, and they were able to get away with it. And as a result of that, they're doubling down. Now, if you look at the double down from what I would call thermal gentrification to thermal genocide, you know, now we're talking about free-range Nazi ovens. This is really scary. You know, if they believe they got away free and clear with that, I don't know what's next. I don't know how fast they could move. But we're literally talking about being in a whole new phase. And that's why it's so important right now that people understand there is a deep state and it is free to do relatively whatever it wants. And it is proceeding to do it. It's not waiting for eminent domain.
Okay. When people say, because we're probably getting at the end of people's attention span and time.
Right.
But when people say Trump is trying to drain the swamp, do you believe that?
I don't think Trump has the power to do it.
But is that his intention? Would he like to?
I think to a certain extent, yes, he would. I think he is concerned that the model that the Bushes and the Clintons were running was not going to succeed, and America was in real danger. But the swamp Trump is going to drain is the people who are no longer necessary on the financial coup, who are now overly expensive and not useful. He's not talking about draining the secret team or the deep state.
Okay. And then we also... You keep bringing up this thing about piratization, and that's like one of the major, you know, basically taking public assets and turning them into private assets as the other way of harvesting. And we're in another stage, a final stage of that, and that he may actually be facilitating that to some extent, whether willingly or unwillingly.
Our signals, you know, we knew one of the cabinet secretaries, I believe at HHS or VA, resigned and said, you know, they're looking at doing, I think it was VA privatization, which is frightening. This is a very bad idea. And he was warning people they're in the guts of the, you know, the bowels of the VA figuring out how to do all of this.
Okay, so the point is you've got a businessman that feels, comes in with the idea that business can probably handle government better to begin with.
Right.
Who may be a key facilitator.
Right.
And helping transition more and more core government functions
right.
to private businesses
right.
and corporations
right.
with him being a cheerleader.
Right.
And so he might be actually either a unintentional participant in helping the secret team do exactly more of what
exactly.
they want to do, because more of that means they can operate more secretly all the time.
Right. Exactly. Right. And I've always believed that part of the QAnon op was getting the crowd ginned up to attack and kill the people who now need to be laid off from the establishment. which is good for the secret team. You're basically training people to be, you know, your Colosseum audience as you get rid of the ones you don't need anymore.
So they're pretty clever. They're not incompetent, are they? Because they figured out a way for us to pay for our own enslavement, and then they figure out a way to make people into attack dogs, to attack basically the people that they want to. And they've also figured out a way to have, you know, Facebook and Google and these other guys collect all the data in the world with us willingly giving it to
them. Right. So I would say I think they're very good at finance, and I think they're very good at mind control. I think they have within the deep state operational teams who are quite capable and extraordinary. If you look at who they are and where they're going, I don't agree. I mean, one of the reasons I stepped out is I think they're going to fail. I don't agree with where they're going and what they're doing and how they're doing it. Now, the problem is they may have information that I don't have, and so maybe what they're doing makes sense. But I think there are deep failures and flaws in, you know, despite all their capacity and capability. One of the things I want to bring up, which we're not going to go into today, is the breakaway civilization. You know, you and I have talked, we think the breakaway civilization is, you know, the deep state reports to a secret governance structure. The breakaway civilization is a portion of that deep state that is broken away, but it's still a subsidiary of the governance structure.
Yeah, the way we've described it is the deep state is the operational arm of the high cabal, you know, for the planet, and the breakaway civilization is for off planet.
Right. So I guess Prouty calls it the high cabal. I call it Mr. Global.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you can, I think just like secret team kind of refers to deep state, there's enough that stuff that's analogous that basically you're describing the same type of super sovereign. It goes beyond sovereignty of people, of nations, that has basically more power than nations or nations combined,
right,
to affect behavior on this planet. That's right. What you're describing.
Well, if you look at America, the U.S. government is basically a laundry to suck up the money for a transnational power that really runs what's going on here.
Okay. So, you know, I warned you about any time that we, you know, go here and make these types of statements, people are going to go, okay, well, you know, that brings into doubt everything else that you're saying. That's why I wanted to build a foundation,
right,
with these various events, and hope we can come back and do that,
right,
to say, okay, so let's tell you really what we know now about how this stuff was done and how the secret teams worked and so on.
You know
on.
How hard it is for me to talk within the official reality. Well, because you're asking someone who was trained to deal at a very high learning metabolism to step back and go at a learning metabolism that ensures we fail. That's very hard.
Well, yes, but you have intimate knowledge and also spent a lot of time training yourself and acquiring additional knowledge besides what you know,
right,
and what the government, the favor that the government did to you and, you know, personally persecuted you for years and having to deal with it, so you know firsthand.
Right.
Right. So you're in a little different place.
Right.
So I think it's just important because we have now amazing resources, you being
right,
one of them,
right,
to say, okay, this was how the U2 thing was done. This was what it was really about. Okay. And not only that, you're not even getting it the clear news today, even though you have information's available. This is what the Kennedy assassination of Vietnam was really about. Okay. This was what Iran-Contra was about, and this is how it was done. And then you start to realize it gives you then a map to know.
Right.
That when they tell you that there was four war games going on at the time of 9/11, so they had confusion about what the real planes were and what their hijacked planes were, and those war games included hijacked planes, you understand that the secret team is hard at work.
Right. Now, it's very interesting. We've been going through a long process on the missing money where we had what is supposed to be a good investigative reporter spend a year write a story.
Here's a perfect example.
And after it's all said and done,
on the 21 trillion
that
you and Skidmore have been making an issue of.
And the whole effort is to try and persuade people that it's not 21 trillion, it's 100 billion. So right, you make the story go away by lowering the number. Because 21 trillion is enough money to build a separate civilization. 100 billion is not. You know, so you make it a $100 billion story and you bring it back to, oh, you know, it's poorly managed or, you know, it's out of control.
Right. And to keep your name out of the story as much as possible.
Right.
And you know all the background stuff about where they basically have tried to pull the wool over people's eyes using the Nation magazine,
right,
which has some prestige and so on. But and that's very, very typical of the way the secret team or the deep state works.
And they're good.
Very good.
Very good. Very good.
Okay. So
this one was brilliantly done. Now, if you look at the guys they used to sit on me the last couple of times, they use some of the same guys. They keep recycling them out. But it's amazing.
It's like what Prouty says. You know, he'd show up for another op and, oh, you're here on this? You were just in Guatemala. You're in the Philippines too? You know, whatever. So, you know, it's a small community and it's the same guys doing a lot of the stuff.
Well, but I think it's their Achilles heel is the money.
We always felt that, you know, it's the money and the sex.
Right.
Well, they use both of them as weapons, but it's also their Achilles heel.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons why they're trying to pin all the pedophilia on the Vatican. Because,
right,
you know, it's an out for them, right?
Right.
Okay. So, I mean, we've done a lot. How do we summarize this? Because we don't want to go on and on at this point.
So the way I would summarize it is there is a deep state, and it's helpful to you to understand who and what the deep state is. One, there's a lot of disinformation bopping around. But the other thing is, if we are going into the kind of change that I think we're going into, including reengineering of the U.S. government mechanisms, you and I did a great show on Amazon. They just plopped their headquarters, one next to the Treasury and the other next to the New York Fed. What a surprise. Because I think a lot of the cash flows will be
done. Or one next to the CIA, you could argue, too.
Yeah, CIA and the Treasury. So I think it's important that people have the immune system they need to protect themselves from the disinformation and the framework to watch the reengineering in a way that helps them understand how in their day-to-day life they need to bob and weave and duck and manage.
The way that I would phrase it is exactly what you're saying, but also, you know, the Constitution is built on you being innocent before proven guilty.
Right.
Anytime that you look at a news report that comes out of this compromised media, you should assume they're guilty and try to prove that, and they have the burden to prove that they're innocent. In other words, it is disinformation until proven otherwise.
Right.
That's the way that you need to look at it.
Right.
That's how contaminated it is.
Right.
That's how compromised the Fourth Estate is. And then just realize that the enforcement arm for all this and the facilitator for all this is a fifth arm. That is the covert world that we describe as the deep state and secret state and the secret team that we can go into a lot of detail about now, given the research that's done about very specific events that will give you a map about how exactly they do things. It doesn't always tell you who it is. Sometimes it does.
Right.
But certainly how. And then also, perhaps, why.
Right. One way, if somebody wants to really deep dive this, read Prouty's books. And read the three books we gave you on the Kennedy assassination, Talbot.
And we'll have some other sources.
Right.
You know, there's been some, like Peter Dale Scott did a very nice
Peter
book.
Dale Scott has done great work,
right,
on,
so
the,
there's
on the deep state.
Tons and tons of information. But we're going to try to get it down to a few things that you can go to, and then hopefully it'll just, if you have any doubts about this stuff, it'll put you in the right frame of mind to know.
Right. The last thing I want to say, it's very important to understand that the deep state is not something that's in someplace else. It networks into every family, every phone, every smart meter, smart...
It used to be the 3,000 communities. Now it's basically to an individual level.
Right, but they still control the mechanisms of the counties. So if you look at the pots of money, you know, they manage the pots of money and taxes and all the governmental stuff one county at a time. And it rolls up in the counties. And that's why I keep telling people, you better pay attention to your local
right,
elections.
Right, but the point, what you're trying to say is that the control mechanism now, because of data, is able to go down to the individual level.
Right.
The major control mechanism, sub-mechanism, was the county at that point. Because
right.
It was people and it was a political mechanism.
Right. The deep state is in your house. It's in your city hall. It's in your local courthouse. It's everywhere. And this, that's why I call it spiritual warfare. We are dealing with this 24/7 every day. I mean, they've got a software bot on everybody. So it's not something out there. And part of seeing it in your life is being able to bring it down to the local level. But I'm with you. Start with Prouty. Start with the Kennedy assassination. There are a bunch of good movies. Start with the JFK movie and start to see the deep state as it operates through your day-to-day life in a way that can help you live your free and inspired life. You need to know when to duck.
And assume it's misinformation to prove it otherwise.
Right, exactly. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on the Solari Report. And may I close with a statement I always make, which truly Harry understands. Don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Good night and good luck.